you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Oh, that's right. When you hear those trumpets, you know it must be mock draft season. We have another mock draft to talk to you about today on this episode of the Next Pats podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to everyone who has been listening the last few weeks here, the Next Pats podcast, where we're trying to figure out what this team is going to look like in 2019, free agency, the draft. It's been a lot of fun so far, so we appreciate everyone that has subscribed, everyone that has downloaded, everyone that has commented and rated, and everyone that has shared this with your parents and specifically with your moms and maybe your mom's book club. We appreciate all of you because, again, this has been a blast. We're going to keep this thing rolling through the off season. Today, we have a great episode for you. We are going to get into my most recent 7-round Patriots-specific mock draft. I know the last time I did one of these, I said it might be the dumbest thing I've ever done. Well, I've come back around and I've done another one for you. I just think it's a fascinating way to try to get familiar with prospects who could end up with the Patriots. We're looking at what the Patriots like in players. We're looking at their needs and we're trying to see who fits the puzzle. And we're not doubling up on any of our picks from the previous 7-round Patriots-specific mock draft. So you're going to have 12 new players. Yeah, we made picks for all 12 slots that the Patriots own right now. There is very little chance that the Patriots end up with a dozen rookies coming out of draft weekend, but we're going to do it anyway because the more names, I think the better it is for all of us in terms of our familiarity with draft prospects in 2019. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to have a conversation with John Pollard of Zebra Sports, Zebra Technologies. You may have heard of the Zebra franchise, Zebra Technologies, before, because they're the ones that are providing us in the NFL with the next-gen stats that we've absolutely been eating up the last couple of years. This past year, especially, we're finding out which players are the fastest on the field. We saw Devin McCourty break the season record for velocity in miles per hour by any player with the football in his hands in week 8 in Buffalo, interception return for a touchdown. That was subsequently broken, but I think for people, at least in this area, that kind of put next-gen technology and next-gen stats in all of our consciousness, and I think it's been a really fascinating way to follow the game. It's a new way to follow the game. It's a new way to evaluate players. It's a new way to try to figure out who may be at risk in terms of injury for teams that are using Zebra Technologies at their practices. So fascinating conversation with John Pollard. You're going to want to stick around for that. But let's start with the Patriots-specific 7-round mock draft. Absolute undertaking, let me tell you. Because once you get into that 6th, 7th round area, you're starting to look into players that you really haven't watched a ton of, but you may have heard a little bit about, and maybe you skimmed their tape, and maybe they showed you just a little bit of something that might indicate to you that they're a fit for this New England Patriots team. But first and foremost, we're going to start right at the top. And we did our first round mock draft that's league-wide. We did that earlier in the week, and we had Dexter Lawrence going to the Patriots, defensive tackle out of Clemson, long, strong, 340 pounds, probably runs a sub-5-second 40, absolute physical specimen. He's going to the Patriots in the first round at number 32. We're going to stick with that pick, and that fills a need in some respects for the Patriots. We think there's a chance they're going to lose Malcolm Brown. They're going to lose Danny Shelton, the free agency. You need some big bodies on first and second down, so they address that need with their first pick, and stick around. They're going to address that thing a little bit later in the draft as well. Second round pick, number 56. Now, I could see the Patriots trading up into a higher slot in that second round, because I think it is pretty deep, the second tier of players in this class. I've been told, you know, basically picks 1 through 7 maybe 1 through 6, you're going to get legit franchise-altering players. After that, you're talking about that 10 to 32 range and maybe even a couple picks after that, players being, you know, maybe similar levels in terms of the talent that you're getting. So if the Patriots pick at 32, that's great. Maybe they could use some of their ammo in those dozen picks that they have and move up from number 56 to get a little bit higher in the second round to, you know, really capitalize on the depth of this draft class. But I have them sticking at number 56, and I have them going with Charles Omenihu. He's a defensive lineman out of Texas. He might be a little bit of a tweener because he's 280, he's 6'5", incredibly long. Length for days, 36-inch arms, and again, 280 pounds. That's a good-sized defensive end if that's where you want to use him. You maybe want to use him in that Trey Flowers role. A little bit bigger than Trey Flowers, a little heavier than that guy. But he ran a 4.92 40, 4.36 short shuttle. That's pretty athletic. 36 and a half inches in the vertical, 115 inches in the broad jump. That guy knows how to move that long, you know, heavy frame. Again, for a defensive end, that's really good size. Not a great three cone, but the Patriots aren't necessarily looking for these burners off the edge to get after the quarterback. They just want to crush the pocket. They want guys with long arms. They want to be able to lock out in two gap. I think Charles Omenihu can do all of those things. He looks like a Patriot to me. Now, number 64 in the second round, I have the Patriots addressing their need at wide receiver, and they're going to a familiar program. They're dipping in to that pool of dogs that they just love so damn much. Riley Ridley, wide receiver out of Georgia. This would be a pick, guys, where they might actually be getting away from what they typically like in terms of physical measurements at this position. They love good three-cone times. They want guys who are fast, obviously. Riley Ridley has the size. He's 6 foot one, 199 pounds, physical, knows how to use his hands, great with contested catches, played at a high level in the SEC, went up against the best of the best, and had success when they actually threw it to him. He didn't have a ton of opportunities, but he put up some good numbers against some really good competition, games against Alabama, went up against Greedy Williams versus LSU. He's probably going to be a first-round pick, high-end first-round pick. That's the kind of guy that has performed under the bright lights that the Patriots would appreciate. They obviously love that program. Head coach Kirby Smart has a great relationship with Bill Belichick. So for all those reasons, he looks like a fit to me. The Patriots need a bigger body on the outside. He's just not a tremendous athlete. Only 4.58 in the 40. 7-plus seconds in the three-cone. Not a great athlete, but he looks like he knows how to play. His brother went in the first round last year. I just think he's pretty refined. He's physical enough that the Patriots would trust him in contested catch situations. All right, we're going to burn through our next few picks here as we get deeper into the draft. Number 73, that's their first third-round pick, Patriots' first third-round pick, Juan Thornhill, defensive back out of the University of Virginia. You want a versatile defensive back, somebody who played corner and safety in college, somebody who can match up with multiple body types, whether it's tight ends or receivers, somebody who might be able to play in the slot, somebody who's an elite athlete, 4.42 40, 44-inch vertical, 141-inch broad jump. This guy lit it up at the combine, Juan Thornhill, and he, again, is a versatile player, somebody who looks like he has good instincts. And if you're thinking about life after Devin McCourty, life after Patrick Chung, Thornhill feels more of like a free safety to me than he does really a box safety like Chung. But you have to start thinking about what's next at that position, and Thornhill would help you out there. Pick number 97, third round, Kahale Waring, tight end out of San Diego State. This might be a little late to dip into this position. It's supposed to be a deep position in the draft, and we're kind of getting to the bottom end of guys that we think are going to be NFL caliber players here with Waring. You know, Irv Smith's off the board, TJ Hawkinson's off the board, Noah Fant's off the board. That might be too long for the Patriots. They might want one of those guys. But if they wait, Waring is interesting. 6'5", 252 pounds, really good athlete. The guy played water polo in college. Water polo. I mean, could you picture Bill Belichick talking about this guy at the podium? It would be like Stephen Neal all over again. He loves talking about Stephen Neal. Barely had any experience playing football, and all of a sudden he comes to the Patriots and he's a starting guard and he's one of the best players in the league at his position. They would love coaching this guy up. I think he would take the coaching from watching him. It looks like he tries really hard as a blocker. He's a little bit off balance at times, but again, he cares. He's working at it. Number 101, Daylon Mack, defensive tackle. We told you we were going for the big heavies again. Texas A&M, 6'1", 336. That is a big boy right there. Big-time recruit coming out of high school. Didn't put up crazy numbers at Texas A&M, but had a good year last year. And I think he's the type of guy that would potentially have an ability to give the Patriots to run that rotation out that they like. So if you have Dexter Lawrence, you have Lawrence Guy, now you have Daylon Mack, if he figures it out in terms of being able to transition to the pro game. I mean, he did it in the SEC, had a good year last year. He looks like a true nose. That makes everybody a little bit better on the interior of that defensive line. Fourth round, number 134, Ryquell Armstead, running back out of Temple. You guys remember Jeremy Hill? That guy looked like he was going to have a real role for the Patriots last year as their big back, maybe spelling Sony Michel as Sony Michel took on more as the year went on. Well, they lost him early in the year. Then they lost Sony Michel. Then they lost Rex Burkhead. And you had James White basically serving as a three-down back and Cordarrelle Patterson getting running back snaps. I think they could use a true big back, and that's what Armstead is. 5'11", 220 pounds, ran great in the 40, 4.45. So he's an athlete. He's not just a battering ram, but he would be a physical presence for you. And where this team is so built around the power running game, you can't afford to lose Sony Michel and not have a between-the-tackles runner. You can't afford to lose both Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead and not have that guy who can sort of dot the I in that I formation and run in short yard situations and give you something. I think Ryquell Armstead could do that for you, and he might be a special teams player for you as well. Sixth round, they're going quarterback. We talked a little bit about quarterbacks already. We had Brett Rippon going in the seven-round mock the first time around. Now it's Ryan Finley. Actually, Rippon's former teammate at Boise State. Rippon beat out Ryan Finley. Finley got hurt. Rippon won the job at Boise State. Finley said, I'm not going to play here. This kid's pretty good. Ends up going to NC State. Runs a pro-style offense. Everything the Patriots have typically drafted in a quarterback. He's got the height, 6'4". He's pretty accurate, over 60% completions, over 7 yards per attempt. Better than, slightly better, but better than a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio in college. That's usually what the Patriots are looking for, Power 5 conference guys. Finley checks all of those boxes. So I have him going to the Patriots in the sixth round. Seventh round, we're rapid fire. How about a little Andrew Van Ginkle? You guys okay with that? Andrew Van Ginkle, linebacker out of Wisconsin. You've probably never heard of him before, and that's okay. But it's 6'3", 241. Good size at that position, at a position that's getting smaller by the year, it feels like, with these kids coming out of college. And an elite, elite athlete. And I think potentially a special teamer at the next level. Fullback Alec Ingold, had to give that guy a shout out again. He was on the podcast last week, the only fullback at the combine. You know about him by now. You know how important the fullback is to this offense. He's going to the Patriots in the seventh round. That's a special teams candidate as well. Then I've got Kyle Phillips going to the Patriots. This is their third seventh round pick. Kyle Phillips, edge defender from Tennessee, 6'4", 270 pounds, 34 inch arms, went to the Shrine game and had a good week. Practiced well. This guy's not on anybody's mock draft anywhere. You know, coming out of the SEC, you know, he didn't have the most productive career ever, but he played against the best of the best. I think this is somebody that maybe if you can tap into his potential, you might have an inside-outside type of threat. Again, if you're looking for length on the edge, if you're the Patriots, Kyle Phillips is an interesting guy. We know the Patriots. The Patriots are visiting everywhere, but we know the Patriots were visiting Tennessee last fall, right in the middle of the season there. So they would have had an opportunity to get a close look at Kyle Phillips and see what he brought to the table. Last pick for the Patriots, number 252. This is Cody Thompson out of Toledo. What if I told you that there was a former dual threat quarterback playing college football in Ohio for a team that's mascot is two words and the first word is golden, and it's not the Golden Flashes of Kent State, the Golden Rockets, not the Golden Flashes. Cody Thompson, anyway, he's bigger than Edelman, but very quick. He's 6'1", 205 pounds, was a former quarterback, 3.87 three cone, that's good. 4.03 short shuttle, that's very good. He's a good athlete. I think he's probably a slot because he's not necessarily a burner, but that's what the Patriots have done for years, is you can invest late on drafted guys. Julian Edelman was a seventh round pick. So there you go. Cody Thompson, maybe if Braxton Berrios doesn't work out, your slot receiver of the future. There you go. That's your full seven-round mock draft. You want more details on those guys, you can find that thing, NBC Sports Boston. phillyperry.com or follow me on Twitter at @PhilAPerry. It'll be right there for you. You can consume every last bit of minutia about all those prospects we just threw at you. But hopefully now you get a few more names to think about when draft weekend rolls around, and you can say, hey, you know, when it's the sixth round and everybody's checked out, you can say, hey, I know that guy. I heard about him on the Next Pats podcast. That's the goal. All right, now let's get into our conversation with John Pollard. Again, it's not all about necessarily what's next with the Patriots. It's what's next with this league, what's next with technology associated with this league, what's happening with the game itself, and how teams and how evaluators are looking at players and how they might look at players down the line with all of the information that is now at their disposal. Nobody better to talk to us about that than John Pollard of Zebra Sports and Zebra Technologies. Let's get into that conversation with John right now. Here with John Pollard of Zebra Technologies and the Vice President of Business Development for Zebra Sports. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
I really
you for having
appreciate
me.
You taking some time.
My
it's an exciting time for you, for your company. The first year where all teams across the league have been able to kind of share in the data that you guys are providing to the NFL. What have you noticed now that the year has come and gone in terms of what the reaction has been around the league to all that information being available?
Right. That's a great question. Well, we've just finished our fifth year of the official player tracking technology of the NFL. But as you mentioned, the 2018 season was the first season that the teams actually received tracking data for both what we call both sides of ball for all teams. And as you might expect, as a result of the increased data being available, the utility and how teams are actually leveraging the information through the season has changed quite a bit. And in general, I would say where tracking data was an element to the strength and conditioning and player development aspects of a football organization, because the data is available for both sides of ball and through the power of software and data visualization techniques and analytics, we're seeing teams also use tracking technology now for looking at tendencies, for play calling tendencies, or using it as an information resource for advanced or self-scouting reports.
Are you finding that teams are approaching this information as though it's water coming out of the fire hose, or are teams really better able to absorb it because the technology, you know, while it's been developing, I'm sure, has been around in some way, shape, or form for a few years now. So are teams better at just absorbing what's being thrown at them?
Yeah, certainly the data that's collected is voluminous, and so the chips on the players. So each player has two chips in their shoulder pads. Those chips blink what we call blink 12 times per second, and they're sending signals to receivers installed around the perimeter of every stadium in the NFL, including the international locations. The ball is chipped, and that's blinking 25 times a second. That's sending signals. So if you imagine a spreadsheet or a data file, it's pretty voluminous per game. But that's where our work in terms of developing software tools and analytical capabilities and providing that to teams to help them leverage the information, organize the information in the way that can be, you know, increase the utility of it. Not only do we provide technology solutions and applications that allow teams to manage the data, the league itself provides an application that is really robust that allows teams to get to the information more easily, look at really a set of key reports, but also merge the tracking data to game video, which of course is the lifeblood from a personnel evaluation and game study perspective.
Sure. And so when you're a fan and you're watching, or when you're the Patriots and you're watching and say it's Patriots Bills in Buffalo week 8 and Devin McCourty returns an interception for a touchdown and he sets the new 2018 record for miles per hour in game by any player, that's you guys. That's your technology that we're benefiting from. Is there one piece of information that you found that teams feel like is the most valuable for them to receive from game to game?
That's a really good question. You know, so Zebra Technologies, we are the enabling technology that provides the data for, as fans and media, we see as next-gen stats. So anytime we see next-gen stats on a broadcast or the website that's part of NFL.com, yes, we're the technology that's creating all that information. I'd say a couple of things. We're familiar with how fast players run, so the miles per hour piece is interesting. I think it's also interesting for us as football fans, and even though I work in the industry, I'm still a fan, how miles per hour has, just in a matter of a few years, become more of a common metric that we speak with much more comfort than we did even 3 years ago for, say, like miles per hour. We're used to seeing that in baseball for a pitcher or a slap shot speed. We're used to seeing 40-yard times. But now miles per hour is a metric I think we see the teams being much more comfortable in evaluating how they assess wide receivers and defensive backs and how they might differentiate in speed. So the miles per hour piece is definitely used more by teams because they're more comfortable with the definition of miles per hour and how to categorize it by position, as I said. I think the other thing is because we track the players on the field and the proximity from each other, information like pass receiver, wide receiver separation, or any receiver, especially with Gronkowski, right? Receiver capability of creating separation from a defender. That type of information from a professional evaluator's perspective or a coaching perspective is really useful. So we can see how far players are away from each other in any moment in time. We can also then track the speed and acceleration of a player when they're certainly afar. So a defensive back that's away from a receiver, as soon as the ball is released, we can actually calculate how fast they get to that receiver with empirical data versus just subjective scouting.
So when Julian Edelman is shaking Los Angeles Rams at the top of his route in the Super Bowl, you guys know exactly how far away he is from his coverage when the ball's in his hands, essentially. And does that then translate, like, over the course of a season, hey, this player on average created X yards of separation per snap?
It certainly can be directional information for the experts in the coaching ranks, right? So and you bring up Julian, for instance. I think about the Super Bowl in Houston against the Falcons. You know, Julian played 93 snaps because he played special teams snaps as well. And the game obviously went into overtime. You could see Julian's acceleration rate change over time, as you might expect. Even with passes, we're all focused on the play, the intended receiver. Well, of course, Julian's running routes when he's not actually catching the ball. So do we see a reduced acceleration, or especially in a timing type of offense, you know, there's anticipation that's there. That's going to change as the player works throughout the entire game, how many snaps that they play, but also throughout a season. So again, this is the type of the ways that we're taught we see information being used, the tracking information being used by teams to study players' capabilities in game and over a course of a season.
And then do you find, or have teams found that it's useful, this information is useful in terms of injury prevention too? Because we can talk about, you know, how great a player is moving in terms of creating separation, but it works the other way too. As you mentioned, as they get tired, you can see that, you can track that, and then maybe that sparks you to action if you're a coach and say, hey, maybe we need to pull you out for a couple more plays in the fourth quarter. Or if it's a practice client, you guys support teams in terms of how they use this technology in their practices. Maybe they can dial back workloads on a day-to-day basis to help maybe keep them healthier. Is that something you found as well?
Yeah, that's perfectly framed. I mean, we have almost a third of the league using the same systems that are in the NFL stadiums for their practice facilities. So we set up our technology in our receiver boxes around the perimeter of the outdoor fields, and most of the teams in the NFL have an indoor bubble as well, and we set up the system in there so they can use the system indoor and outdoors. You know, it's an interesting thing that we can track how fast players are running over a set of plays or a single play and how far they're actually running. So you can actually see, the tread on the tire of a player throughout the season. One of the scenarios we like to talk about with teams is if you have a college player in his rookie season, that player is typically used to playing in a 10 to 12 game season, but it's a 17-week process. So you want to evaluate that workload not only within inside a week, but also over a course of a season to make sure you have maximum performance and you keep that player on the field as long as possible. Interesting, though, when we talk about an example that always sticks in my mind are special teams players. Typically during a practice week, special teams players don't get a lot of reps where they get maximum accelerations. So where the tendency might be for us from the outside looking in, thinking that a system like ours will help guide a team to pull back workload on a player, frankly, injuries can happen also through underutilization during a week. So a lot of our teams who use our system are looking at players, in particular special teams players, not only special teams players, but that's a scenario that definitely stands out for me. We want to make sure that those gunners on punts, right, the punt coverage people, the kickoff people, are actually getting to their maximum reps or their maximum velocity in terms of running during a week to hopefully prevent opportunities for soft tissue injuries on Sunday.
Now, you mentioned, and we know, you provide all the information on game day for the NFL, and you have teams that you're working with for their practices, but not every team. And there are, it sounds like, we were talking a little bit before we started the podcast here, there are some other companies that have GPS-related technology that, that teams will use. Is this sort of, are we in 2019 kind of in the space race sort of age when it comes to this information and who can provide the next best piece of data that will help a team win a game?
Yeah, I think it's come down to that. I mean, in sports in general around the globe, there are three primary technical categories or technology categories that are used. We're RFID-based, and you know, for the listeners, we have chips in the shoulder pads, chips in the players. We use objects that send signals to receiver boxes in what we would call a local network. What's good about the fact that it's a local network is that the accuracy is there, so we're sub 6 inches in terms of accuracy. Also, the availability of the data is near real time. So sub 3 seconds, the information can be translated from a chip to the receiver box to a software interface. So during a practice, our teams can actually look at a dashboard and see the workload happening. And if they need to pull a player out of a drill or encourage a player to increase their workload during a practice session or during a period within a practice, they can do that. Other technologies like GPS rely on the satellites that are actually encircling the Earth. Their margin of error is typically 2 to 4 feet in terms of accuracy, and the data latency is a little bit differentiated than the RFID piece. The other piece is optical. Optical, really for an American football situation, doesn't work quite as well because it's close scrums and lots of players on the field. We tend to see optical technologies in things like soccer, golf, and also tennis.
You mentioned chip in the ball. We've talked about player separation and miles per hour. What kinds of data can you get from having data coming from the football itself? Is that just all about, again, miles per hour in terms of quarterback's arm strength, or is there more you can get from it?
Well, it does capture velocity in miles per hour, also rotational information. So we've heard the term, you know, that player can spin it.
We're actually
counting the spins. And that's important. You know, when you have a player that plays potentially in the Midwest or in weather conditions and not an indoor situation, the ability to spin is tendency to drive the ball better and more accurate. So miles per hour isn't the most important metric, but it's an element that we do have teams that we work with in the practice side really look at the miles per hour over a period of an entire season to make sure that they're not overworking the player's arms. Also, we see what I really enjoy is some of the velocity and rotational information that teams look at. They look at it by matching route types. What types of routes are they throwing to? And do they see differentiations and variables between the types of throws and velocity and rotational based on the route types and how far it's going down the field? I think that's really interesting information as well. You know, also for kicks, I mean, with all the different types of punt capabilities that are available there, that information, special teams coaches are well known with inside the industry as being kind of the mad scientists of information in a football organization. So they've really enjoyed the information that we get for punts and kicks as well.
That's fascinating to me, because if you're on one hash and you have to throw an out to the opposite sideline, maybe if you're an offensive coordinator or quarterback's coach, you want to be able to see, okay, how fast is that ball actually getting to the sideline? And is that a good idea for us to make that throw on a consistent basis? Or if we have the data, maybe we should go a different route when it comes to that sort of situation.
Precisely. That's something they certainly can be directional information that they can reference. I'll say for our practice clients, I get excited about the advanced analytics and new ways the information can be used. But, you know, in a practice environment, you know, there are coaches or assistant coaches who are starting their careers by literally manually counting the number of throws the quarterbacks have on NFL rosters. Our technology, with the use of our software and the tracking capabilities, allows us to automatically count if I made the pitch count for quarterbacks during a practice session. And what we've found is that many of our practice clients have found that their quarterbacks will go out early before practice officially starts, and they're throwing maybe 2 or 3 times more than they would an entire practice. And so that's when the trainer or the coach will go and say, hey, take it easy now. Take all your throws during the pre-practice period. You want to make sure you're set up for the rest of practice. And so we found that type of pre-practice track, not just ball tracking for quarterbacks in that example, but players themselves in pregame. You know, you go to a game, you see the players running around before the team formally comes out and does warm-ups. Teams are interested in making sure that the players aren't in a free-form way, you know, exerting too much energy during that pregame period, and that they're set up for optimal performance for the game itself.
The last thing I want to ask you, John, is what's next? And when I say that, you know, we're sitting here in Indianapolis for the NFL Scouting Combine. Are we going to someday see the death of the stopwatch? Are we, because we have this technology and because we can track players in real time and acceleration and miles per hour and also all those sorts of things that are so valuable, at some point, are we you know, are we ever going to get rid of the 40? Or is the 40 going to be not necessarily, oh, this guy ran a 4.3 in the 40, he's really fast, but this guy hit 30, you know, hit 23 miles an hour somehow in the 30, in the 40, and so that's now how we just look at all this. Is that where this might be going?
Well, if I may, that it's a bit of a story, but I think it's important to say, and you really lead me into this, one of the great examples I most recently had in the 2018 season. I was visiting a team that had their number one receiver, who's a well-known receiver. I'll leave the team and the player's names out of it, who had caught a pass that looked like it was going to be a short touchdown. It was a 9 route straight down the field. He was ahead of everybody. He was going to score. And from outside of the video frame came another player who caught this player from behind. The player that caught the number one receiver from behind, it was somebody who was third or fourth on the depth chart, because we were later into the season, and so they were into the depth chart way down, the fourth or fifth defensive back.
Yeah, sure.
They weren't sure who's this player, because he had run to 21 and a half miles an hour in pursuit. So that led the team to go look at who the player was. They found out that that player had also hit those types of numbers in terms of pure speed for three previous games. So he had a small sampling of work that was interesting. They went to the scouting report and found that that player had actually run a higher than 4.5 40 here in Indianapolis. Based on the Indianapolis assessment, he was not somebody that they would have considered a draft pick. It would be an undrafted free agent or camp invite. Based on the 21 miles an hour and 21 and a half miles an hour they saw in that particular play, it led them to say, look, if we knew that or had that information as reference, we might have graded him as high as a fourth round potential draft pick. So is it next? That's just one way the information might be just indicative, because that's the players. I mean, these professional evaluators are experts. We're not trying to replace or improve or replace what they do in terms of expert. We're just allowing them to be more efficient and give them another set of information that they might look at that could be directional and point them towards a player they may have not considered. So that was when I heard that, I said, okay, we're getting to a point now where that miles per hour and using this can be helpful to a team from that perspective. The other thing I think that's logical, and I do want to add, we have a chip in the ball. We have chips in the pylons. We have chips in the sticks. That information could be useful, in game day operations. We're not part of that process for the NFL, but that's information the NFL could be using to research how they might find efficiencies in operating the game itself.
It's fascinating. It'll be really fascinating to see where this specific event goes. I know right now they're not using that sort of data when it comes to the scouting combine, but maybe someday at some point, if you get the players on board and the league is on board, that might be the kind of thing we're talking about, is, wow, this guy would have run a 4.55 because he doesn't have a great start and he doesn't have a track background. But if you just let him run and reach top speed, he might be one of the fastest guys in the league. And all of a sudden that changes jobs. It changes how teams are constructed, and it might impact the outcomes of games.
Well, for Zebra Technologies, what better position can we be in as a service provider or a partner for the league? If our information and technology can help teams become more efficient and more effective in their decision-making process, if it can help support the career of a player and provide more experience and excitement for fans from that perspective, and then also help the league itself, or help the league manage a game, evolve a game, and present the game to us as fans, and we're in a pretty good position. We're pretty excited about our relationship.
John, thanks so much for being with us. This is
great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Fascinating stuff there from John. Phenomenal story at the end when it comes to just being able to track how fast these guys are moving on the field. Sometimes you don't get that from the 40. We all know the story of Malcolm Butler, ran a 4.6 at Alabama's Pro Day when he was coming out of college. Of course, he didn't have 4.6 speed. He just had a bad day, or his technique wasn't great. That happens all the time with players coming out of college. And if you could get a more accurate assessment of these guys by somehow figuring out a way to keep track of their speed, their game speed, their true speed, it might mean you have fewer personnel misses in all actuality. And so I could see this just becoming more and more a part of the sport itself, whether it's the combine or not, whether the players are into the idea moving forward or not. This is where the game is going. You're not going to be able to stop the process and the progress that technology has made when it comes to this sport and how it can improve really all areas, whether it's on the field or it's in front offices. That'll do it for this edition of the Next Pats podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Again, subscribe, comment, rate. We're going to put something out on Twitter to get some of your questions now that we're post-combine and now that we're, you know, on the eve of free agency here. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you want us to talk about, what you want us to delve into. So please get after us on there. And make sure you listen into Quick Slants, the podcast as well, with our guy Tommy Carr. They let me back on the podcast. It's a very happy moment for me. Very special moment. Brought a tear to my eye. Was back on Quick Slants, the podcast with Tommy Carr. He also spoke to Miguel Benzan to talk about the Patriots salary cap situation. Nobody better when it comes to the numbers than Miguel. So please, please, please listen to Quick Slants, the podcast as well, and continue to listen to the next Pats podcast. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you very soon.